Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Going down. Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the What's Going Down podcast here on Patreon, or ad-free you get on your main feed. I'm all over the place because I'm thinking about all the podcasts I've got to do this week for Christmas, which obviously, in my mind there, caused me to have a bit of a brain fart. But a man who does not have brain farts, because he's too professional to do so, is Mr. Finlay Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Kenny. And also, you're probably still traumatized from last night's Armageddon 2003 recording.
I am. I'm still trying to recover from our Armageddon. But you know what? We talked a little bit off air because we were trying to organize our next podcast. And I think that so as this goes out, Armageddon's not up yet. Armageddon's going to be Wednesday. But I think we actually offered some pretty good conversation about it. More than just kind of, you know, ragging on Triple H the whole time for being terrible. I thought we offered some kind of interesting perspectives as to, you know, how things might have played out differently if other things had happened. But I think that we did a good job.
We did, yeah. There were some profound statements there, as there usually is. We were really just talking, yeah, like what might have happened and why the things happened in the way they did. And, you know, sometimes you think, well, if only things were different, but sometimes, you know, circumstances just dictate that that's how it's going to be. And that was very much the case in 2003, just as it would be for much of 2004, particularly post WrestleMania 20, that, you know, you look back and you think, oh, you know, that was really rough for the people involved and business suffered. But if you look at what was going on at the time, that was just the way it was. That was the direction it was going to travel in. And, you know, that's just, you know, there are peaks and troughs in pro wrestling, and that's just the way it is, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think when we were going to do an Armageddon 2003, I was a bit concerned because I just have such terrible memories of that. You know, I've said before, and we'll get this as we start going through these retro pay-per-view reviews next year. 2004 was the year that I switched off. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it anymore. I just thought it was just terrible. Kind of week to week, so there'll be some things in 2004 that I've actually not seen, because I think it got to a point where I think by the summer of 04, maybe like SummerSlam time, I would maybe just skim through and watch the couple of top matches, and even then I don't know if I've watched all of them. So you know, maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, but given that Harry Guttridge is one of our listeners, has messaged to say that he's went a bit ahead on watching the Retro Weekly shows and said that 2004 is dire. So I don't think we're going to have any pleasant surprises for him.
No, I don't think so either, Ken. But anyway, back to December 2023.
Yes, we're here to talk about the latest happenings in WWE from SmackDown and Raw. So let's go back to last Friday's SmackDown. It was the return of Roman Reigns, his first appearance since Crown Jewel, I think.
Yes, that's correct.
So he opened the show. He was there with Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso, and Solo Sikoa. And he talked about how, you know, there was somebody who's doing a really good job and he's going to compliment that person as being the next in line. And Jimmy, of course, thinks it's him, but it's Solo, and he hugs Solo and said that he loves him. And then Randy Orton comes out to interrupt, and Orton comes out and kind of says, you know, you're the reason that I was taken out and I'm going to take everything from you. And Roman sort of says, it's funny that, you know, you've been away for 18 months and I've not thought about you one bit. And they kind of go back and forth, and Orton challenges for the Rumble and says, you know, that's when he's going to take everything from him. And then Orton tries to get an RKO in, but he can't quite get it. And then we end up getting Orton and Jimmy Uso made for the main event. So a few things going on. What did you make of the opening segment?
Yeah, I thought Jimmy was really entertaining as Roman Reigns was talking about how someone was going to be promoted for his good work lately. And Jimmy's there in the background, you know, as like, this is brilliant. You know, finally, I'm being acknowledged by the tribal chief in his grand return. And of course, we knew it was going to be Solo. You know, Reigns is there. Well, you know, come on, Jimmy, you know, we need to congratulate Solo. And he's going to be, you know, my heir and all my, he's the tribal heir. That's the new nickname, isn't it? That's the new moniker for Solo, the tribal heir. So Jimmy was, really put out because he's the elder brother, of course. You know, Solo's only been on the main roster for like, what will it be, 15 months? Clash of the Castle was his debut, wasn't it, on the main roster? So 15 months or so. I thought it was a decent segment. Randy Orton came out to the surprise of no one, challenged Reigns to a title match at Royal Rumble. Reigns said he hasn't been around for like 18 months. You know, he needed to get to the back of the line. You know, he hadn't earned the title opportunity with Roman Reigns, which is actually a fair point. I'm not quite sure, is Nick Aldis, because Nick Aldis wasn't on the show, was he? He was conspicuous by his absence. So Nick Aldis didn't, you know, weigh in with, you know, an answer or a determination on whether or not Orton would receive his title match with Reigns at Royal Rumble next month. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out. I would presume that Orton will get the title match because it's just a logical match for Reigns at that event. But it's, you know, usually people have to earn the matches, don't they? That's normally the way it works in modern WWE. Someone isn't just, you know, granted a title match, you know, unless the champion agrees to grant that title match. And Reigns was, you know, unwilling to do so in this segment. So I'm not quite sure. I think there's more elements of the storyline that need to be told before this match is official. I mean, I think Orton needs to do something to Reigns, and then Reigns will agree to defend the belt against him. So maybe we'll get that next week. I'm not sure. Maybe they'll leave that until, you know, the final SmackDown of 2023. I'm not sure. But we're not there yet. So, yeah, I mean, it felt like they were leaving something in reserve, which they were. You know, it was okay. Yeah. You know, it could have been hotter. There could have been more enthusiasm for Orton's challenge, I felt.
I do. I mean, I think I can echo that. I think it was decent enough. But, we've talked a lot about in the past about how the Bloodline stuff just doesn't feel as good as it used to be. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't think Orton really could have done much more here to kind of G it up. But I think that people are kind of getting a bit tired of the Roman's away for a while. He comes back. And we're picking up the pieces of what we've been seeing, you know. And I think there's also got to be an element of, you know, even though Jimmy I thought was really good in this show, the Jimmy story still has all these holes in it from when he kind of rejoined and is now kind of just with them. So, I think, I mean, because then obviously we have Jimmy Uso later on.
I think also, Kenny, just to chime in there, I think Solo needs to start showing more as well. You know, this silent type, but I mean,
it's a bit one note.
Yeah, we need more from him. He needs to start contributing more to these segments. He doesn't say much. He barely speaks ever. And I think we need more from Solo, especially if he is going to be Roman Reigns' successor. He needs to show us more in the personality department.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, we did see Jimmy Uso talking to Solo backstage saying that he thought the main event was a setup because, you know, basically Reigns was saying, you know, if you beat Randy Orton, you know, there's all these things will come to you if you're able to win.
Yeah.
And we got the main event, which was Orton and Uso, which was okay. It was decent enough. I mean, you can still see Orton's holding back and not giving you that big match, which, you know, is fair to not do it straight away. So Orton gets the win, obviously. And then after the match, LA Knight comes out. He gets attacked by Roman Reigns. And the Bloodline are kind of taking it to LA Knight and Randy Orton. When AJ Styles' music hits and he came out, it became clear that he had also been to Holland and Barrett during his time off and had been getting some vitamins. And he ended up, did a phenomenal forearm to Roman Reigns, and then the Bloodline were on the outside, and it was the babyfaces sort of standing tall. AJ attacked LA Knight and hit him with a clothesline. So
that's it. I mean, what a shot as well. I mean, it looked tremendous, didn't it? Showed it on replay. Knight sold it fabulously.
Yeah.
And it just looked devastating. You know, Styles is such a pro that it would have just been really light. It just looked so good. And then Styles, you know, Orton was stunned. It was like, what's happening here? Why did you do that? And, you know, in a way, it was almost like Styles was stealing a page out of Orton's book because he's the one who does the RKO from out of nowhere on people who are presumed to be his friends occasionally. I mean, he did the RKO on Nick Aldis, didn't he? Was it 2 weeks ago? Styles was, you know, wasn't explained why Styles had lamped LA Knight. He just walked straight out of the building. Roman Reigns and Solo and Paul Heyman and Jimmy, they were all, you know, stunned by AJ Styles' actions as well. So it's not like AJ was joining the Bloodline, or at least we don't think he is. That would definitely be a twist if he did. I mean, I didn't really see the Styles attack on Knight come in, although it's not a bad call for both because Knight needs a new opponent. And Styles is somebody who will give him a hell of a match. But I just hope they have a storyline explanation for Styles' attack on Knight because, you know, none of us saw it coming. It was totally unexpected.
I think the overall theme to me, I mean, AJ Styles is someone who has been very dull for a very long time.
Yes.
And when he came back here and hit LA Knight, he, in 2 minutes, kind of became more interesting than the Bloodline. And that should not be the case. You know, the Bloodline should be so above an AJ Styles return.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what's more interesting right now. So, you know, I know that multi-man matches are not usually a sell and, you know, you always want to go for one-on-one. But if they did decide to go at Royal Rumble with Roman against Orton and AJ and LA Knight, maybe that could provide a slightly fresher match than the standard Roman routine that we now know. And we now can sort of call the next bit of it coming. So I'm curious, what do you think if they were to go down the route of doing the four of them? I mean, while a four-way is not as sort of box office as a one-on-one, could the freshness element make it a viable option for them, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they could do that. And it could be, because the problem we've got, the Bloodline's strength in many ways is its weakness, isn't it? And we've seen it so many times, and everything has its shelf life. You know, Bloodline's been great. We know it's coming to an end. I think Reigns will lose the belt at WrestleMania. He has to. And I think he'll disappear and come back as a babyface. And I think that'll be a really good role for him. You know, I think he's probably going to wrestle for a while yet, but it'll be, you know, it'd be even more of a part-timer than he currently is. He's going to wrestle fewer and fewer matches after he loses the title. As he transitions to the next stage of his career and his life. But I mean, you know, I think, you know, the Bloodline, it's not as good as it was. Of course it's not. But you go back and look at the Four Horsemen, that had its shelf life and they kept bringing it back. NWO was great from 96 and 97 and even parts of 98 was still, you know, interesting. But nothing lasts forever in pro wrestling. And I think, you know, the Bloodline has been very good and it needs to end next year. preferably at WrestleMania, in my opinion. And then they can go off and do other things because, you know, its shelf life is, its time is nearly up. But as far as the, sorry, to answer your question, the four-way match at Royal Rumble, I think that would be a good call because it means that LA Knight gets his rematch, which he's been demanding. So he gets another crack at the title. You know, AJ can be a part of it. Randy Orton then only has to do one quarter of the work instead of half the work. And we can see, as you pointed out in today's recording, he's taking it easy. You know, he doesn't really know if he can do a lengthy match anymore. Maybe he can, and he's just being very careful. But if it was a four-way match, we wouldn't then have the very highly predictable ending with, you know, Orton being beaten up by Solo and Jimmy at ringside and then losing, you know, after multiple ref bumps. You know, the match we've seen numerous times before. Yeah. If it's a fatal four-way, they can do something different.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other thing, and it's a good point that you make about how, you know, the Bloodline, obviously, you know, even though I think we would all in some ways have liked it to end when it was still at its highest, but that obviously can't happen. But, no. You know, it can still be good. And I do wonder if in the new year when they go down the kind of Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso route, which you assume is a WrestleMania match, that maybe by bringing Jey back into that stuff, it'll give it a boost.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Because, you know, Jay's always been a very good part of the Bloodline, so if he's even against them, that could be interesting. So, you know, if by February, March, we've got Jey going after Jimmy, we've got Cody going after Roman, then, you know, that should hopefully spark things up a little bit. I mean, yeah. I still want your Brock Lesnar idea, but, you know, we're probably not going to get it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I love that one as well. I mean, but they should have done that earlier in the year, you know, yeah, after sure. Jey had split. If they were going to, but, you know, obviously, and then Brock appeared to do the face turn at the end of the Cody feud. So, I mean, he can always turn again, but it wouldn't be advisable. Because, I mean, I think we want Brock versus Gunther, don't we, at WrestleMania? Yeah. I think that's what we want.
Yeah.
So, and that's going to be terrific if that happens. And Brock's a face now. So, and I think Brock should be the one actually to end Gunther's reign. You know, because it doesn't matter. It's not like Brock beating The Undertaker. I mean, Gunther's got to lose the IC title at some point. And after he does lose the IC title, then he can move up to the world title.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so, I agree. Well, let's move on. One thing that's not technically on SmackDown, but I mean, it is a SmackDown-based conversation. Charlotte Flair is out for 9 months.
Yes.
Which was kind of confirmed after we'd recorded our second podcast last week. So she's out for 9 months. I mean, it's a pretty big hole in the SmackDown women's division. So, I mean, is the division, do you think they can survive without her for, you know, that long? Or do you think they need to kind of bring somebody else into SmackDown to pick up the slack?
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, absolutely they can survive without her. I mean, yeah, they showed footage of the injury. It took place during a commercial break, didn't it, on last week's SmackDown in the match with Asuka. And Charlotte suffered a torn ACL, MCL and meniscus. And it was a really quite a bad fall that she took. I mean, they were like both out of control, weren't they, when they fell off the ropes?
Yeah.
Which was very odd to see those two lose control like that. And I said last week, you know, that she was grimacing at the end. And yeah, absolutely. She was in tremendous amounts of pain. Did finish the match. I'm not actually a huge fan of that. I would much prefer it if wrestlers just say, I'm injured, stop the match. You know, this gutting it out and, oh, you know what? In a way, you can see why it is heroic, but, you know, why bother? You know, just end the match if someone's seriously injured. That's what I think they should always do. But as far as Charlotte Flair taking some time off, I mean, obviously, you know, this is kind of sound like a cold statement, you know, and you know, I don't wish injury on anyone. In some ways, the timing of this, it could be worse for Charlotte because she seems a little bit lost as a character. We've said this many times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a face, she's a career heel. I don't know why she's a baby face. She doesn't excel in that role. She just seems like she doesn't, if she's not the champion, she sort of seems like a bit of a spare part. And even though she's one of the big stars there, they never quite know what to do with her when she's not the champ, if she's not the focus of the division. So her actually taking some time off, obviously I would much prefer it was she was taking time off voluntarily, not because she was injured, you know, obviously. But this, her taking some time off when her career to me has been really stale lately, you know, it's not the worst thing that could happen to her career. Obviously, the injury is terrible. I would prefer it, as I just said, if she was taking time off voluntarily and then she could go away and they could come up with a plan for her return with, you know, as a heel or with a new opponent or whatever. But she's not been firing on all cylinders for a long time, has she, Kenny? We say this nearly every week.
Yeah, I think the kind of, like you say, we don't wish injury on her at all, but I think the blessing in disguise for her, hopefully, will be that the time away will give her, hopefully, a freshness to her when she comes back. So
yeah, she needs to just come back as a villain, do what she does best, and just be the queen, you know, supremely arrogant. It's all about me. That's what she needs to do. I mean, to be honest, if Tiffany Stratton is on the main roster by the time Charlotte returns, which I think she will be, I think Charlotte and Tiffany wouldn't be a bad double act as heels.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that would be a good way to bring her back. But she absolutely needs to return as a villain because this face thing has not worked at all. And she doesn't seem to be, she just kind of seems bored, you know, yeah, or has seemed really kind of just not that into being a wrestler. And that's a shame to see because she's obviously very good when she's motivated. We saw that in the Rhea Ripley match at WrestleMania. That was one of the best women's matches of the year. And we haven't seen that version of Charlotte since, have we?
Nope. MIA, she's been. The last thing I want to ask you about Finn on SmackDown before we move on to Raw is we did see Carmelo Hayes. He was announced as a surprise entrant into the US title tournament.
Yep.
He beat Grayson Waller. Obviously, later on in the tournament, Austin Theory faced Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens won that one. What did you make of Carmelo's appearance?
Yeah, it was a little bit shaky at first, and people, it's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously, Hayes has been a huge part of SmackDown for over 2 years now, and has been champion, and you know, is really over in that division. And it was clear that a lot of people in the crowd, SmackDown was held in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It was clear a lot of people in the crowd didn't know who he was. And it wasn't until late in the match that the crowd really warmed to him. And I thought they maybe did a little bit too much, but in some ways they needed to do as much as they did to engage the audience. Because Grayson Waller, you know, I think he's a hell of a talent. He still hasn't quite clicked yet as a sort of, you know, mid-card, on the up, going places heel. I think it's because he loses all the time. Quite probably. But I thought Waller had a tremendous night here as well with Hayes. And I thought by the end of this, when Hayes won with the nothing but net, which leg drop from the top rope to the back of his opponent's neck, his back of his opponent's head, I thought both of them, you know, had really grabbed the crowd's attention and just seemed like stars. So it was a really good night for Hayes. Kevin Owens then beat Austin Theory. I thought that was a really good match as well. Owens always gets the crowd on side, always gets the crowd going. And that was another tournament match. And that means now that Owens will face Carmelo Hayes on this Friday SmackDown in the semi-finals of the US title tournament, the winner of which will face Logan Paul. And Hayes backstage approached Kevin Owens and said, you know, I need this win more than you. Saw that Hayes came across really confident backstage, came across as a major star. And yeah, this was his SmackDown debut. And this was, you know, a big endorsement. I think he was there as Shawn Michaels, as handpicked entrant in the tournament. So he was there representing Shawn Michaels and NXT. So he had to win, obviously. But yeah, I thought he had a really good night. What did you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought he did well. I think that when people from NXT come up like this, it's difficult because there is a lot of people who don't know who they are. But I think that the fact that he kind of won people around by the end is a testament to how good he is. And, you know, he's obviously still kind of got some stuff to deal with in NXT. So, you know, this might be like a kind of Kevin Owens call-up where he's kind of around and he finishes stuff in NXT and then eventually is fully on the main roster later in 2024. But yeah, he's doing well. I hope for big things for him. So
yeah, I mean, they obviously like him. I mean, he's quite small, but I don't think that matters because he can do lots of different things in the ring. He's not just an aerial artist. He can do he's got the full package of skills, and he's very good on promos as well. And he knows how to act in segments. He's done lots of different things, and he can play the heel. He can play the face. You know, he's, you know, villainous, and he's likable as well. So I think he's going to do all right. I think he's going to do well, actually. So be interested to see if he beats Kevin Owens on SmackDown this week. I can't. In some ways, I'd like to see Hayes versus Lashley in the final, or maybe Hayes versus Santos Escobar in the final, because I think Hayes versus Logan Paul would be a hell of a match.
Yeah, I think Hayes might make it to the final before he ultimately doesn't get it. But I mean, maybe he will. Maybe they'll give it to him. But we'll see. We'll monitor the situation. And let's move on to Raw. Obviously, the Judgment Day were a big part of it as usual. They opened the show, and they were talking about the main event match against the Creed tag titles. Rhea was talking about Ivy Nile. But then R-Truth came out dressed in a Judgment Day T-shirt with his name added at the bottom. And he challenges JD McDonagh to a Miracle on 34th Street fight, to which McDonagh said, the match is already made. It's been promoted. And Archer said that we should do Loser Leaves Judgment Day. Damian Priest said that's a good idea. And then R-Truth beat JD McDonagh in 10 minutes in a Loser Leaves Judgment Day match. I mean, it was obviously meant to be a bit of a piss take, generally, but and the leaving of the Judgment Day didn't last long thanks to Rhea. But did you enjoy this as good holiday fun?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was really well done. I think Truth is a lot of fun as a character, and he's a really smart worker because he doesn't really do much. He's got a very economical act in the ring, but everything he does is over. And if you were, you know, a young wrestler and you're doing all these different things and no one's reacting to them, you can learn a lot from R-Truth. I mean, okay, of course, he's been there forever, so he's over. And it's easier, of course, when you're over. But, I mean, Truth didn't do too much. But everything he did really provoked a reaction. I thought JD McDonagh was a lot of fun here, bumping for Truth. He's really good at selling his JD. You know, he really sells. And that's another thing that more young wrestlers should do, and I've obviously said and written that many times before. And in the end, yeah, Truth scored this upset win. Both JD and Truth were on the middle rope as a table set up in the ring, and they flopped to a table. R-Truth was laying on top of JD, and he scored this pinfall. And Dominic Mysterio was at ringside. He looked like he was about to crack up numerous times in the match. He looked like he was finding R-Truth hilarious. So, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun, and then JD couldn't believe it. He was like, oh no, what does this mean? Am I out of the Judgment Day? Does that mean R-Truth's in? Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, it was an opening match. That's what it was. It was in the opening match slot, and Truth as an opening match act, I think, is very effective. What do you reckon, Kenny?
Yeah, it was harmless. It was fun. I get why some people might not really be into it, but I think R-Truth's so good at pulling it off that you kind of, you know, you can't help but laugh at R-Truth, and you know, he plays it straight, and that's why it's so funny. You know, he plays it straight, and that's why you're able to laugh at the ridiculousness. So, and the thing is, that guy, does anybody look better for their age than R-Truth?
Well, I think he's about a year younger than me. I think he was born in 1970, so he'd be 53 or thereabouts.
He's 51. Born January 72.
I thought he was born in 1970 for some reason. So, but yeah, he's obviously, only a few years younger than me. And yeah, he looks great. He's in great shape. And I'm glad that he's been able to make a return and he's contributing. You know, he's absolutely contributing to the storylines. And he was a big part of the show, actually, when you think about it. He was a huge part of the show, was R-Truth.
But then we saw the Judgment Day later in the show. They were in the main event, Priest and Balor against the Creeds for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. Obviously, Priest and Balor did retain. But how did the Creeds do in your eyes, Finn? You know, 'cause this is a big spot for them to be put in so soon on their main roster run.
Yeah, not much response for a lot of the match. And it wasn't until Julius made the hot tag that the match really came alive. And Judgment Day had sold a lot in the first portion of the match before, of course, the heels took over. And then we had the, you know, the big hot tag from Julius and he turned the tables. So it was not until really like the third act of the match that the crowd was really properly engaged, which is slightly disappointing. But I think what people will remember is the finish. And, you know, they did two of the, you know, Brutus balls and there was some really close near falls. I mean, obviously it would have been absurd for the Creed brothers to win the belts this early in their run. But they were very competitive and Balor and Priest, I thought, gave them a ton of offense and really tried with them. So, yeah, I mean, it was okay. I just would have liked it if the crowd were with them from the off, which they weren't. And there was a kind of a few moments there, particularly with Brutus. I think he's clearly the inferior member of the team. And that's not to say that he, you know, he's not good enough to work on Raw or doesn't deserve to be in this spot. You can see Julius is, you mentioned this from week one, Kenny, when they arrived on Raw. Julius is going to be the single star. In fact, you said, I really hope these guys don't split up, otherwise Brutus is doomed, you know. And Julius is somebody, you know, is just going to be huge in future, you know, if he can avoid injury. You just hope he's almost a bit like a Jason Jordan type, isn't he?
Yeah, like he is. Yeah, for sure. I liked the match. I thought the match was pretty good. My only thing with the Creeds is I really don't like the finisher. I think the finisher of like him hitting his bum off of them when he's kind of got them up as if it's the Doomsday device, I just don't like it. I don't think it looks very devastating. I would like it if they could change something so that Brutus, I don't know what else he could do. Maybe they don't want to do the direct rip-off of the Doomsday device and do a clothesline, but something better than the, you know, brief kind of like, what's the word? Like, hint of the bum hitting the chest. Yeah. Just doesn't give me, it just doesn't. It
doesn't seem devastating, does it? That's the thing.
No, not at all.
But I don't know what you mean. It's like, it's not really a move. You go, wow, look at that. Like the first time you saw Double Impact or the Doomsday device from the Doomsday device from the Road Warriors or Legion of Doom, you're like, wow, you know, that's what got them over, or a big part of the reason they got over was that amazing killer finisher. But yeah, you are right. And also when Brutus lands, he usually lands on the person he's just struck, which is, I'm sure it's fairly safe, but I don't know. You know, you could end up having a potential for someone getting injured with Brutus landing on the person he's just hit with the Brutus ball. So maybe they need to have a rethink there. But yeah, I'm with you. And also when you look at Julius and some of the devastating moves he does as part of his act, the finisher's nowhere near as good as some of the stuff he does that leads to the finish. And it's supposed to be the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's just one thing they need to tweak, because I think that the finisher just doesn't have the punch that you'd want it to.
Yeah.
I thought Drew McIntyre was also tremendous on this show. He obviously was out there to talk to Seth Rollins, and he talked about all the sacrifices that he's made, and you know, he came home and saw his family recently and they all look old, to which I say, well, we're Scottish, what do you expect? We look old when we're young. And he basically said that he has to win the title for all these sacrifices to be worth it, and he's going to do it on the day one Raw. Rollins obviously kind of claps back at him, and then McIntyre tries to grab Rollins, but Rollins hits him back. They kind of have a bit of a fight, and then McIntyre does this Alabama slam onto the ring steps. So a pretty good angle, because next week it's a best of Raw, so there's no Raw next week. So the next Raw is going to be that January 1st show, so this is the kind of go-home angle for that.
What did you- yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, day one Raw, January 1st, San Diego, California. They set a load of stuff up on this show for that program. And yeah, Drew was, you know, there's some method stuff going on there, wasn't there? You know, he was, because we know his mother died about 9 years ago now, 8, 9 years ago, something like that. It was a while ago, wasn't it? I think it was when he was still working there before he lost his job in 2014.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was channeling those real emotions then. It was a very different promo, really. And for a heel, it was quite a risk for him to say the things that he did. But if this was the place to do it, because this was in Iowa, Rollins' home state, so he was really popular here. No one's going to boo Rollins, no matter what Drew said, or no matter how much sympathy he was seeking when he was talking about all the sacrifices that he made. And people know this. People know this is true. People, you know this is not something that he's just manufacturing. And in the end, you know, Drew said that, sorry, Seth Rollins said to Drew, you know, last week, you know, I said to CM Punk that I hated him and I do, but I pity you. And that was the moment when Drew snapped and attacked Rollins, and that led to the scrap at ringside. And as you said, the Alabama Slammer on the steps, which, you know, it's quite obviously they were in control of that, but it looked devastating, didn't it? The way that they shot it, and Rollins really sold, I think he sold his elbow, his arm. He looked like he was in a lot of pain there. I'm sure he wasn't. And yeah, it was a really good setup, I think, for the match in 2 weeks. I'm curious to see how that plays out. It's hard for me to believe that Rollins is going to lose to Drew McIntyre. Could possibly, you know, Drew could be champ. He could win the belt there and then drop it back to Rollins at Royal Rumble. That could happen.
I think it could. So, I mean, there's a hint of doubt, which I think is good that we have. Elsewhere on Raw, we had we had a title change on Raw. We had Caden Carter and Katana Chance defeat Chelsea Green and Piper Niven for the women's tag team titles. And yeah, I mean, look, I think Chelsea Green did better in this than she usually does.
Yeah.
Low bar. The bar is in the ground. But I mean, it's hard to get excited about Katana and Caden having the titles because the division is a joke. But I guess it's better that it's on them because they're a better team in the ring. But yeah, hard to get excited about it, I think.
Well, one thing we didn't mention about SmackDown was Damage Control have moved on from Charlotte because we know she's not going to be around again until next August or September. So they put the Asuka and Kairi Sane team together. Clearly, they're going to be pursuing the title, the Women's Tag Team Championship, which is now held by Caden Carter and Katana Chance. So, yeah, I think that was the reason why Carter and Chance won the belts here, so they could then drop them to Asuka and Sane, which we know is coming at some point quite soon. And I think that's the best thing that could happen to the tag team belts, that they're on a credible team, you know, that are in the plans and that are viewed as stars. So I think it's all part of a, you know, larger plan for the belts. And, you know, frankly, Kenny, they should have done this earlier. And I've no idea why Piper Niven and Chelsea Green held the belts for as long as they did. They should have been on Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Where have they gone to? They've disappeared again.
Well, they may be getting a return now that they're new champions. So maybe this will be the sign they're coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I do hope so, because I think they're a quality team. They've never really been given a chance ever since they lost to, it was Shayna and Ronda, wasn't it?
Shayna and Ronda, we've not seen them since.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a few things. They've made a few appearances, but I'm not sure if they wrestled on TV. They may well have wrestled on TV once or twice, but they've been used, you know, very sparingly since. And I think they've got so much more to offer than we've seen from them. They're a ready-made team. They've got an act. You know, it's like, why are these two not tag champs? So, yeah, I hope this is like a turning point for the women's tag team division, and that we start to see some quality matchups. And these belts are, you know, are revived. I mean, they've been struggling all year, let's be honest. I mean, Raquel and Liv weren't much of a team, were they, as tag champs? Yeah.
There shouldn't really be a women's tag division. There's not enough people. There's not there's not the interest for it, I don't think, really, from the audience. But it's here.
I mean, there could be. There absolutely could be. And it's, you know, this is up to WWE to get this thing over again, is to rebuild it, rebuild its credibility. And I think, you know, Karen Chance's victory was the first step in that. And they can rebuild this for sure. But, you know, they just need to put some work in and get the belts on a quality team and start having matches that matter. It's that simple, really.
And the last thing I wanted to bring up was Gunther and Miz had an over 20-minute match for the IC title. And I didn't quite think Miz had this kind of match in him. But he did. He did. And, I think this was better than their previous match.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Gunther's got to be in the conversation now as just being one of the best in the ring they've ever had. Because look what he's doing with a guy like The Miz, who before Gunther was just a bit of a joke.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, you know, Gunther's one of the best in the biz. He's, you know, top one or two, if not number one in the biz right now. I can't wait for Gunther versus Lesnar. I think that's going to be blockbuster. You know, I don't suppose that is going to headline a WrestleMania, but it could headline a WrestleMania. To me, it's big enough to headline WrestleMania. And this was just a masterful showing from Gunther. And let's give The Miz a lot of credit as well for his performance, which I think was, you know, he took a real beating here. Miz is not renowned for that. And in fact, as he was taking a beating in this match, I was just reminded of the famous Daniel Bryan, as he was called then, Daniel Bryan and Miz, you know, confrontation on Talking Smack, wasn't it, Kenny, when Bryan was still retired?
Yes, yes.
And he's like, what was that line? You wrestle like somebody who's afraid to get hit. Something like that, wasn't it, that Bryan said?
Yeah, that was the line, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, I've got to say, I bet Bryan was watching this, or Bryan Danielson was watching this and thinking, wow, you know, Miz took a beating in this match. And I bet Danielson was thinking, wow, you know, when my contract ends, I'm going back there, WWE, for a match with that guy. And I bet Danielson, he will then obviously revert to Daniel Bryan. I bet that's what happens. I bet Daniel Bryan returns to WWE either late next year or early in 2025, specifically for a match with this guy, Gunther, who had a hell of, I mean, this was one of his best, in some ways, one of his best matches ever because of who he was against. And we believed it. You know, when Miz hit that skull-crushing finale, people were willing to believe that Miz might actually beat Gunther.
Yeah.
And then they did the skull-crushing finale off the middle rope. And they didn't prostitute the move. You know, they didn't have Gunther kicking out of it. That was a really good, you know, piece of booking, really sensible match layout there.
Yes,
don't have people, you know, kicking out of moves unnecessarily and ruining the, you know, the potency of a finisher. So, you know, Miz hit the skull-crushing finale off the middle rope and Gunther rolled to ringside. No kick out. And then Gunther regrouped and won after. I think it was two power bombs and an almighty clothesline. So, yeah, it was terrific. It was, you know, the match of the night. And afterwards, Gunther was backstage and he said to Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci, you know, why are you celebrating? You know, you two have done nothing this year. 2023 for you two has been a total write-off. I'm leaving now and you better hold the fort in my absence and step up and show me something. So, and then Ludwig Kaiser lost to Jay, didn't he? So that probably won't have pleased Gunther, but it did occur to me that maybe we're going to get Gunther versus Jay when Gunther returns, possibly.
Yeah, which would be a great Rumble match, potentially, if that's what they go for. Listen, that's all the time we've got for today. But we will be back on Thursday with Power Slam. We'll talk about some other bits and pieces and stuff that's going on. We do go and head over to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, because we're reviewing old issues of Power Slam right now, including, you know, we're doing issue 5 at the moment, which is part of the first yearbook, so you can kind of use that as a companion to the yearbook, which obviously has had rave reviews from people who are just loving having that yearbook, so which is great. And then obviously the Armageddon 2003 review that we did, that's going to be going up tomorrow, and there'll be content. We're going to pre-record stuff, so there will be content going out pretty much every day over Christmas and New Year. So if you get bored with the family that you have to sit and pretend that you like for a couple of days, you can just pop off into a corner, listen to us.
Oh, you cynic, Kenny. You sound like me.
But yeah, thank you so much for all your support, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.